Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Nobody today. No guest. No Matt Moore. No Royce Young. No Ethan Sherwood-Strauss. The cold has rendered my internet virtually useless. If I can even upload this episode, it'll be kind of a minor miracle. It is so cold in Minneapolis right now. This isn't like a horrible stand-up comedian thing. It is so cold in Minneapolis that internet has not worked for a couple of days. I mean, it works, but it's not really letting me upload stuff. It's not really letting me download stuff. I can just kind of exist there. I can do tweets and I can watch YouTube videos, and that's about it, which is really all I do anyway. But yeah, can't have a guest on. Tried to have Matt on a couple of times. Tried calling his cell phone. Tried calling him on Skype. He sounded like R2-D2 and just didn't feel like editing the podcast for 6.5 hours. So what we're going to do today, it's just me answering your Twitter questions that you have tagged with hashtag EOB pod, and this is going to be incredibly awkward because it's just going to be me talking for 30 minutes. If I can stretch 30 minutes out of this, I may run for president. I may believe that I can do anything in this world. Before we do start, we do have to check in on Tara Reid, checking her tweets. She did tweet something on the 4th saying, "I'm about to go eat and I can't decide if I want to eat Chinese food or Italian food. What do you think?" I think you got to go Italian food here. Now, Chinese food, it depends on the group you're with. If you're with a big group, Chinese food's the way to go because you can share things. There's all kind of, you know, the family style and all that deal, and the appetizers are always going to be better. But if you're going just for quality of food, not that Chinese food isn't quality, but there's just so many more options in terms of enhancing your tasting experience with Italian food. Plus, I like sauces, I like cheese. It's kind of two staples of Italian food. So I really hope. She didn't say where she ended up going. She took a picture with her friend saying, "I'm so happy I'm with my best friends," and then posted the same picture without a caption, which was kind of weird. But I really do. Maybe we should all tweet her and try to figure out what she ended up having for dinner, whether it was Italian or Chinese. But let's get to your questions. I asked you your questions on Twitter, and I started getting a lot of questions about food and movies, and we do have to mix a little bit of basketball into this just so I can justify still doing these kind of podcasts. But let's see what we have from your Twitter questions. The first one is, "Are the Raptors for real, Z's? I need to know. Also, Tara Reid update, please." That's from @William_Lou. Gave you your Tara Reid update. It's about Italian or Chinese food that she may have had. I don't know if the Raptors are for real. It's a weird thing because they traded Rudy Gay, and now they've gone on this really good run, and they're the Atlantic Division leaders, which I don't really know what that means because the Atlantic Division isn't anything. It's not an actual division. It's a cellar of sadness right now. I guess in terms of, can they be the third best team in the East? Yeah, I think they could this year, especially with Al Horford going down for the Hawks. Leaves a big window open for them. But what does that mean for you? What does that actually accomplish? I'm still of the opinion that they should be tanking. They shouldn't. I mean, you can't ask the players to tank. We've been over that a lot, but what you can do is kind of set yourself up, and maybe they thought they were doing that with the Rudy Gay trade. Maybe it will take a Kyle Lowry deal because Kyle's been playing so well. If they move Kyle Lowry and then they start to lose, that's probably the best-case scenario for them. I don't really think that this core that they have is a long-term option for contending. You know, keep Valanciunas, keep Amir Johnson, I guess, as like a super role player. But, you know, the DeRozan question is interesting because he's played really well. He's added a little bit to his game this year, and he's pretty decent as a scoring option. It's not like you're throwing, you know, a J.R. Smith of this year out there. I mean, DeMar DeRozan's a solid scoring option, but, you know, is he a guy you want to pay $10, $11 million for the next couple of years and eating up that cap space as you're rebuilding or reloading or retooling or whatever you want to call it? I'm not quite sure that is I'm not really sure that's the solution for them right now. So I say tank, go get Andrew Wiggins, go get Jabari Parker, go get Joel Embiid or Julius Randle or whomever. Find one of those people. But as for real this season, yeah, I guess they're as real as you can be as the third best team in the East. Next question: how does Courtney Lee improve the Grizzlies' shooting? That's from @tab027. I don't know. Courtney Lee has shot well this year. He's been a really solid scoring option. He's been a really solid shooter in terms of percentages, but he hasn't done anything on either side of the court in terms of impact for the Celtics in his 2 years there. And it's kind of weird. Like, we had these – you start wondering if Courtney Lee even really matters as a role player in the NBA, because we had him starting off with the Orlando Magic, and they made a finals run, and Courtney Lee misses this, you know, great alley-oop chance that could have really changed the series against the Lakers. And so, you know, there's all this hype and potential, and, hey, look how much he contributed at such a young age in terms of basketball experience. But since then, he's been really hit or miss. He just hasn't, you know, he didn't really impress with the Rockets. He was good, but he wasn't what you thought he would be. And then for the Celtics, he's been almost nothing. He's been of no significance at all. And you just wonder, you know, him in the shooting guard spot off the bench for the Grizzlies isn't bad. It's a good role player to have. But they gave up a guy who's kind of playing their pseudo point guard position. Now you got Nick Calathes as your point guard. I mean, they really need a backup point guard. Mike Conley has about a dozen injuries right now that he's playing through. And I don't mind the trade, but you kind of hope that maybe they're going to move one other player or try to sign whoever the best point guard in the D-League is right now, because they definitely need somebody. At Francis Adu Jr. has asked, Independence Day or Bad Boys? It's Independence Day, and you can put up a nice argument for Bad Boys. It's a great action movie, but one of those movies has Bill Pullman as the president delivering the most inspirational speech in this world's history, and the other one is Bad Boys. So it's definitely Independence Day. Another question is this one from @Wilcox1232. What's your most can't-miss TV movie? For him, it's Event Horizon. For me, it's Finding Forrester. It's also my favorite movie. It's on all the time on the movie channels. I've been watching the 5-year engagement a lot lately with Jared Segal and Emily something. I don't know, a British lady who's not too bad on the eyes. That one, I wouldn't say it's a go-to, but it's good background noise. So all time Finding Forrester, or maybe Shawshank Redemption. But this one is this 5-year engagement, I can't escape it right now. From @JFeldman93, that's Feldman with two N's. Can you see Harden's saboteur defense helping take Houston out of contender class? Yes, but I think that has more to do with the combination of him and Jeremy Lin, or him and Patrick Beverley. Though that backcourt combination has to work. I don't know how much you can rely on Aaron Brooks being a good role player this year. Maybe you can just go big and have James Harden as a point guard, surrounded with Omri Caspi and Chandler Parsons and Terrence Jones and then Dwight Howard inside. That could work. But, you can't have a complete meltdown in the backcourt defensively. And Patrick Beverley's a good defender, but does he give you enough on offense? And then Jeremy Lin, I like him better as a six man than as a starter on this Rockets team. Defensively, he's just not that good. And combined with Harden, that's, you know, it's just a wide open entryway into the paint with those two. I don't think it takes them out of contender class completely, because Harden's offense can make up for it. We've seen that. But they definitely need to figure out the backcourt situation, because it's going to be really hard to get past the Thunder and get past the Spurs when you get to the playoffs. Our friend Jared Dubin from Bloomberg Sports and Hardwood Paroxysm and all over the internet, @JDubin5, do you think Mark Wahlberg's character in Shooter ever watched basketball? No, and here's why. Here's the thing about snipers that I don't think they can really translate to a practical life. I don't think if you're a sniper, you can't have other interests. You can't have a secondary life. You're pretty much all in with being a sniper, because it's going to take intense focus. It's going to take just this unreal, almost Adderall-addled existence where you cannot veer from anything. You have to constantly practice shooting. You have to keep up with weather conditions and what your target is, and you really have to study that. I would liken it to being focused on one sport as a writer as opposed to focus on all sports as a writer. You can do it, and you can be good, but you can't be great. It's really hard to be great, because there's just not enough time in the day to study each sport as much as you need to, and that's how it is when you're a sniper. You can be a good sniper, but nobody wants a good sniper. They want the best sniper, and that's what Mark Wahlberg's character was. There's no way he was ever worried about, you know, J.R. Smith's shooting percentage or what Dion Waiters was going to become or whether or not Dwight Howard's back is going to be okay or whether or not Andre Drummond would be able to figure out free throws in his career. There's no way you can combine the two things to make it to have a good enough performance at your job while still paying attention. I'm sure if he's in a bar somewhere pretending to be, you know, just a patron of the bar and not really like, you know, stalking his next assignment, I'm sure he would look at the TV and be like, "Oh, look at that. James Harden's no longer on the Thunder. Oh, look at that. I didn't know Kobe Bryant had shaved his head." Like, I'm sure there are things he's just missed over the years. Maybe he likes basketball. I don't think he ever really watched it that much. We've got another question. This one from Adam Morrison Crying. Thoughts on how CJ Miles stepped up in Kyrie's absence and how bad the Cavs are without Kyrie Irving. The Cavs are bad with Kyrie Irving, so without him, they're atrocious. Now, I like CJ Miles. He's a very nice role player. He's a very solid. I keep saying solid. Here's a little pro tip for you. If you want to talk about role players in the NBA you like, just say they're solid. There's nothing. There's no comeback anybody can have for that. So yeah, CJ Miles is a solid role player. I love his shooting. I love how he scores coming off screens. I think he's a good enough ball handler. Defensively, he's decent. He can stay in front of people. I think he's more of a scheme defender where put him in a good scheme, I think he can execute it as opposed to just going out there and being a lockdown guy or even being just a roadblock for a guy. That whole Cavs team is just such a mess right now. It's not even Bynum. They were a mess before Bynum. There's some disconnect between the talent they have on the roster. And they have a lot of talent. Like, even as much crap as Matt and I give Dion Waiters, he's played really well lately. And, you know, they could mold him into being a really good six-man type of role player, like you saw with J.R. Smith last year, or Jamal Crawford, or any of those guys. You know, he can be a gunner off the bench and really excel at that position. But you have to... I don't know. You've got to find a way to get Tristan Thompson going. You've got to find a way to get Andrew Bynum healthy. But now that that's out of the case, I mean, you have enough rotation with the big men, and you have enough depth. I mean, with the guard position with Jarrett Jack and Kyrie Irving, like, this should be a much better team. This should be close to .500 team, and they're not. And you start wondering, is Mike Brown? I think Mike Brown's a decent coach. I think he can play. You know, I think he can. He can really lead guys, but at what point is he just better off as a coordinator for you, as an assistant? Maybe he's not good at taking a young team and making and help building them up. Some coaches are just give them a good team, they'll give you a good product. But you know, we saw with Flip Saunders in Washington, and we've seen it with guys here and there. Some guys just aren't good at coaching young teams that need to be taught how to win. I'm not going to say your Twitter handle. You know who you are. Your name is Nikki Mags, but your Twitter handle is a little too inappropriate to say on the podcast. How come Steph Curry doesn't go by Stephen Curry? What's up with that? I'll tell you what's up with that. Steph Curry is a modern NBA player. He is a modern man who understands basketball and understands that this trend of efficiency, the idea of efficiency in basketball, is what really drives, you know, the next wave of how we look at the game and where the game goes from here. Stephen Curry, that's not an efficient thing to say. You can just say Steph. You know, Stephen, you might thought someone put a wrong emphasis in Stephen. You might be talking about Stephen Jackson jacking up all these threes. But with Steph, there is one Steph in the league now that Stephon Marbury is off eating Vaseline somewhere that isn't the NBA. And that's as efficient as you can get. He's all about efficiency with the three-pointers and his name. Friend Chris Barnwell, at Chris Barnwell, good guy, give him a follow, asks, if Kemba Walker had teammates that could shoot, would that open his game more? I would say yes, just off the cuff. Like, I feel like you surround anybody with shooters in this league, it opens their game up. But I wonder, the same kind of questions I had with Kyrie Irving his first 2 years, and it doesn't mean that these questions mean that Kemba Walker can't do it, because I think you've seen it with Kyrie here and there where it's a good enough thing. But just because a player has weapons around him doesn't mean he'll necessarily know how to run that team and run those players and figure out how to get everybody involved. And sometimes you're just better off as a lead scorer and maybe not so much a scorer slash distributor. So it would definitely open up his game. I don't know how much it benefits the team to have that happen, but it definitely couldn't hurt. I don't know that it benefits, but it definitely wouldn't hurt the Bobcats to surround Kemba Walker with players that could actually shoot, because you give him room to operate. I think we've seen his handle's so good. He's so good. He's so strong and powerful with step back and sidestep jumpers that, if it improves his game and guys can play off of that and you're still going to run some of the offense through Al Jefferson, it could be a big deal. We've got at Choco Mojito. A chocolate mojito, by the way, sounds disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. But at Choco Mojito says, Zach, how did you feel the first possessions of the game when Ricky looked like he could get to the rim anytime he wanted? Hope? I think you're talking about the Thunder game. He was driving right around Reggie Jackson like Reggie wasn't even there. Yeah, I mean, Ricky has that ability. He's not some slow guard who can't do anything off the dribble. He's a guy that can beat you with a quick crossover. It's not a flashy crossover. It's just a very compact move. He's quick enough to turn the corner. The problem is that he's such a bad finisher because there's so much imbalance. There's so many weird steps with what he, with how he attacks, that he's not comfortable around the rim. Maybe he's not strong enough. And then he just kind of keeps his dribble alive and tries to find, Kevin Martin curling around the perimeter, Corey Brewer curling around the perimeter. He'll look to dump it down to Peck inside. The hope is that it's not that him getting to the rim, it's when he's finishing. And he finished at the rim against the Thunder really well throughout most of the game. That's where the hope is. I think finishing is definitely something that's fixable, but I don't know. He's going to have to show it a lot more than the couple of games that we've seen lately, because it is still so bad. He still missed. There was one play he got bailed out with a foul, but he hit the side of the rim on a layup attempt. Maybe he did get fouled. I didn't see much contact in that game, but yeah, you got to hope that he can figure out the footwork. All right, this next one comes from @GrayTR. What's your all-time pickup basketball team consisting of basketball-playing movie characters? That's a hell of a question. I think, obviously, the first... Is it a cop-out to go with Michael Jordan? No, Space Jam sucks. We're leaving Space Jam out of it. It's a terrible movie. It's good if you're 12 years old, 14 years old. It's not good after that. We gotta drop this Space Jam thing. So Michael Jordan is out. We're not going to use that. Definitely have to go with Julius Erving in The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh, Billy Hoyle, White Men Can't Jump, Stacy Patton from Eddie. You know what? I like the big man who threatened Raymond. His name's Raymond, and White Men Can't Jump. He threatens to shoot everybody in the playground after he tries to rob the store. Then sells his gun. He's got a knife. He's got like a barber's razor as he's like swiping at people. He had a little Rasheed Wallace in him, so I'm gonna go him for my big man. And then this is a very heavy. Very heavy dose of White Men Can't Jump, because I'm also going to go with Flight from the Flight and Willie team that they beat in the finals of the tournament, the Brotherhood tournament, simply because one athletic big man who can dunk on people, so I'll take that guy any day. And plus the trash talking was great. I've used this line a lot, but I love the line of I'm going to go to the 7th floor and drop you off on the 5th. He could dunk on one guy, say that line, it's worth the entire inclusion for him, even if he can't play defense on guys who can't play basketball. So that would be my team. Billy Hoyle, Stacy Patton, Dr. J from Fish to Save Pittsburgh, Raymond, and Flight. Next question. In a world run by plastic forks, you're armed with a toaster and an army of doorknobs. What do you do? This is very simple, actually. With the toaster, now you might have to modify it a little bit. I'm no mechanical engineer. But you melt down the doorknobs with the toaster. You then mold said melted doorknobs into metal forks or copper forks, whatever the hell the material would be, and you use those against plastic forks. I don't understand. I mean, that just seems like basic survivalist to me, but I don't know. What do I know? Next one, and that was from This Is DAM. That next one, @CraigKleinPeter. Why is it always Spurs OKC method and never Pacers method for small market teams? 2010 draft, Paul George at 10, Lance Stephenson at 40. Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, the Thunder and the Spurs have had more success than the Pacers. Yes, the Pacers got to Eastern Conference Finals last year. Thunder have gotten to the finals, and that does matter, especially with the fact that they have the two best players. Well, all right. You could argue that Paul George is better than Russell Westbrook. I don't agree. I would take Westbrook over Paul George. But if you want to make that argument that they're about even or Paul George is better, that's okay. But the combination of Westbrook and Durant is better than the combination of Roy Hibbert and Paul George. So you have a talent, a talent advantage there, and the success. Obviously, the Spurs have won, four titles in their time together, so they're way above. But I think it's not that the Pacers haven't drafted well. It's just that we've seen it more often out of the Thunder and especially the Spurs. And there's just a little bit of a talent disparity to where it's going to be that model over the Pacers model. But all three are very good. Someone suggested that I just read Tara Reid tweets and complain about Kesha. I could complain about Kesha all day. I refuse to spell her name with a dollar sign. I will always say K-E and then spell out dollar sign and then H-A because she just seems like a terrible person. But you also ask, who does Andre Miller get traded to? I don't know that he gets traded, oddly enough. I'm sure by the time I'm done editing and posting this podcast, he will have been dealt. But in terms of him getting moved, you know, there are a couple of teams that need a point guard. You know, maybe even the Thunder could go after him, although there's a salary cap issue there. I mean, ideally, I would love for him to be on the Timberwolves, move JJ Brea and Alexi Shved for him. That's never going to happen. The Nuggets would never go for that move. But for two reasons: one, Andre Miller raids the opposing team's media dinner in every city he goes to. There is a media dinner that some teams charge for the media members to buy the dinner and then eat as much as they want. Some places will give it for free, but Andre Miller is such a veteran. It seems like he keeps his per diem and just goes and gets food out of there, which is, I want to talk to him about that extensively. And two, with that trade, you would have JJ Barea and Nate Robinson on the same team, and I don't see how that goes poorly for everyone that's not a Nuggets fan. The real Dustin Darby asks, chances Daryl Morey makes a patented deadline deal that everyone is both amazed and angry over when they realize he fleeced another GM. This I like. I think the Rockets could make a big move at the deadline. Now, before the season, it was they should go get LaMarcus Aldridge because we didn't know if the Blazers were going to be good enough to satiate Aldridge's desire to win right now. Clearly, they're good enough. So trying to find the next big name player to join them. I don't know who they could go get, but they have plenty of assets. You can trade Terrence Jones, you can trade Monta Ellis, like you can trade a future draft pick. They've got players to trade. You can trade Ashik if you're going to go get a big salary. There is a move to make, and he always seems to come out of nowhere with these deals, so I say the chances are very high. At Halo Hales asks, or says, demonstrate a pickup line which is basketball related. This is going to be, well, this is wildly inappropriate, but now let's just say there would be a euphemism with hitting a shot from deep. We'll just leave it at that, and we'll move on before I get fired. At William_S asks, what would you do if you were running the Bulls? What do you think they'll actually do? If I were the Bulls, I would trade Deng. I would amnesty Boozer. And I think I would just try to lose games and try to hit another Derrick Rose lottery type deal with Jabari Parker or Andrew Wiggins or somebody. I mean, I think you have to miss the playoffs. You've got to give yourself a chance to get into the top 10 of the lottery, and then maybe you can win the lottery, get in the top 3. But going forward with a core of Derrick Rose, assuming he gets healthy, which hope he does, Jimmy Butler, Joakim Noah, and whatever top pick you can add, that's a good core. That might end up being a better core than what they have, and then you throw Taj Gibson in there. Mirotic comes over. That's another play. I mean, that's a good core of players, and I think that's what they should do. That's Reinsdorf. I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that this Bulls front office and ownership is actually good. It's just possible that Michael Jordan was too good to fail. And so I think they'll probably end up keeping Dang. They'll probably, you know, maybe they still amnesty Boozer this summer, but I think they'll just kind of stay with status quo and maybe try to reload the bench a little bit in a different way. I don't think it's going to work. At Phoenix 29, Phoenix spelled with a YX, asked, Die Hard with a Vengeance or Shooter? It's definitely Die Hard with a Vengeance. We discussed Shooter a little bit ago. It's a fine movie, especially if you're into snipers. Die Hard with a Vengeance, there's puzzles, there's riddles, there's Sam Jackson, there's running through New York, there's disarming bombs, there's the truck driver who has all the information about Chester A. Arthur and the aqueduct that you could ever want. It's just such a better movie. At Bedoya underscore Jonathan asks, what is a Nicolas Cage? A Nicolas Cage is a hero. That's what he is. At Eric Felks asks, what gunner would make the better Imperial Stormtrooper, JR or Nick Young? I'm gonna go JR because... No, I'm gonna go Nick Young because... Nick Young doesn't turn the ball over, which means he's not going to drop his gun if he gets into a hairy situation. And I think that his shooting is more accurate. So I just think that he's got a better chance of really bringing the fire to the fight. Whereas you probably have some alien lady walk by the bar that's next to the shootout area. And JR would get distracted and he'd just go, you know, go try to have fun for the night instead of taking care of his job. And I don't, you know, I just don't know that you can trust him. At Aras underscore Bayram asks, most fun NBA drinking game if you want to be absolutely hammered? I would go with every time... I would go with a game centered around the Wolves bench. Every time J.J. Barea takes a frustrating shot or Alexei Shved jump passes or J.J. Barea passes to Dante Cunningham for a jumper, that's when you drink. And you can also throw in every time Luke Richard and Mbah Mute drops a pass. I mean, it actually might be kind of dangerous. You want to drink responsibly in that situation and not just go all out. So I think that that's a fun one to do, but you want to make sure you have a buddy and you have a safe word. At Chris K323 asks, what do the Cavs need to do to not suck anymore? We talked about that a little bit, but I don't know. I think they need a new front office. Maybe Mike Brown isn't the coach. Maybe you need to kind of blow it up while still keeping Kyrie Irving. Maybe deal Anderson Varejao and Tristan Thompson. I mean, the drafting has been solid. There's that solid word again. The drafting's been solid, but it hasn't been good. And especially when you look at, you know, hindsight with the draft is always such a tricky conversation because, you know, you pick differently in one draft, it means that the rest of the drafts are completely different. So maybe you just go with what you think would be available there, but it seems like they've passed on some pretty good players for some just solid players. And you know, I think you need a new front office. I think you need to find a system that is going to maximize Kyrie Irving's incredible talents and just build around him. Next question is from at Whammy Giveaway. With CP3 out 6 weeks, who should the Clips go after? Suggested names here. Drops me a link with the names of Pierre Jackson, which requires a trade because the Pelicans hold his draft rights. Pierre Jackson out of Baylor, who's a very short but very fiery point guard. D. Boston out of the Idaho Stampede, Eric Dawson out of the Austin Toros, Delonte West, Jamal Tinsley, Bobby Brown, Shannon Brown, Jorge Gutierrez, Hito Turkoglu, Chris Duhon, Baron Davis, Gilbert Arenas, or using the Eric Bledsoe trade player exception to bring back Chauncey Billups. I think anything that's involving a trade for a significant player is probably going to require a draft pick. Even a second-round pick, I'm not crazy about giving up for Pierre Jackson or Chauncey Billups. It's probably going to be a pick at the end of the second round, so maybe the chances of hitting that are very low. I don't think those guys are good enough to warrant giving up any kind of asset for, even as minimal as that asset may seem. West, Tinsley, Shannon Brown, Chris Duhon, Hito Turkoglu, I wouldn't bring back any of those guys. I wouldn't bring any of those guys in because I think there's too much of a learning curve and they've lost too much to really believe that they're going to make a difference. Baron Davis, there's no way he's going to play basketball again. I think he's happy not having to work out every day and just going and making like independent films and stuff like that. Gilbert Arenas is interesting, but I don't think he can play anymore. The last couple of times he's tried to play, it was really bad. It was really awkward. It was kind of sad to watch, and I don't see that working out. I think I would bring up somebody from the D League. You know, they'll probably try to re-sign Malik Waynes. They just released him. They'll try to re-sign him for a 10-day contract, keep him on 10 days until they have to sign him for the rest of the season. They save a little bit of money that way and a little flexibility in case they do make a trade. So he'll come back. He's decent. I like D Boss out of the two between him and Dawson. I definitely would go the D League route, though. I would try to find somebody in the D League, a point guard that you feel fits what you want to do the best. You can't just rely on Darren Collison. I'm just not a Collison guy. You can survive a little bit with Jamal Crawford as the lead guard in certain situations, but you really do need a point guard. So I'd go either Boss, Dawson, or another D League prospect. We've got at eBelling 25. Do you think the Wolves make a move if things improve or if they don't? I don't think the Wolves have many moves to make right now. They're going to wait for Chase Budinger to come back probably this week. Ronny Turiaf as well. And those guys will make the bench better. I don't know if they'll fix it because they still got some issues there. But it'll definitely make it better. And I think they're going to wait and see, you know, as those guys round into shape, what there is there. In terms of who they could move, there's just not a lot. They can move Dante Cunningham, but how much does that get you in return? They can maybe move Jang and somebody for a player to come in, but you know, does anybody want Barea's deal? It's not bad, but it's not you know, expiring. They're not moving Martin. They're not moving Love. They're not moving Rubio. They're not moving Peck. They're not moving Brewer. They're not moving Chase. So there's not a lot of options. I think if this experiment fails this year with the roster and they don't make the playoffs, you know, heading into the summer, yeah, I expect them to make moves, but there's just not a lot of wiggle room that they have right now because they've kind of committed to this core. At White Castle, Castle with a K, asks, what is the difference between a citizen and a civilian? Civilians, they can't have kids, they can't really work, they can't vote. Citizen, though, is someone who has, you know, served in the army or has rich parents that are movers and shakers in the political realm of the world in which Starship Troopers exists. At N. Bilka asks, why is Randy Whitman coaching an NBA team in 2014? I don't know. This is the crazy thing. Somehow, this is how good John Wall and Bradley Beal are and that group of Wizards that doesn't look like they should be that good. But Randy Whitman is somewhat succeeding with this team. And by succeeding, I mean they're not a complete afterthought. They're not just a joke of a team. They're currently 14-17. They're fifth in the East, which, my God, I can't believe that's fifth in the East. We're in January, that's fifth in the East. Wow. Randy Whitman is such a bad coach. He doesn't have an offensive system that works. He doesn't have a defensive system that works unless you have, you know, really Emeka Okafor back there. And I mean, they're just kind of treading water, and he's good enough to help you tread water if you have good players. But Ted Leonsis, go get a coach. There are plenty of coaches out there, plenty of assistants out there that could take over. I don't understand why Randy Whitman keeps getting jobs. This is his third head coaching job, and unfortunately John Wall is too good to get Randy Whitman fired. We'll do one more from Francis Adu Jr., who says, if you had to pick one Atlantic Division team to be the best of the division for the next 3 years, which team would it be? It's really going to depend on, I mean, if you're just going off the current core of players, I would say the Knicks. I guess I would say that. Oh my God. I guess the Knicks, because I can't believe they would be this bad 3 years in a row. But more realistically, it's probably the Raptors. Yeah, it's probably the Raptors because Brook Lopez is hurt this year. No, it's the Nets. I would go with the Nets because I'm just going to pretend that Brook Lopez will be healthy next year and for the years to come. Him, Darren Williams, Joe Johnson, you know, these guys are all pretty much locked in through until 2016 when the books get cleared. I'd go with them. Outside of the Nets, I think that the Raptors and even the Sixers have the best chance to really run this division in 2 years. But again, there's so many moving parts. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Carmelo free agency and what they're going to do. By the way, Howard Beck on Bleacher Report had an excellent piece on why the Knicks should trade Carmelo, blow it up, start all over. I suggest reading that. It's really good. But I think the Raptors with Masai Ujiri, he's going to rebuild quickly. I believe in Sam Hinkie, and you can already see this team is a lot better than they should be. And Brett Brown is a fantastic coach already. They're going to get a big name player in the draft. They're going to have a lot of flexibility for trades. The Sixers and the Raptors are probably the two best candidates, but I think the safest one to go with is the Nets. Final question: Jared Dubin gets a second one. What was Eric Van Leemer's ERA in Summer Catch? All right, so we're going an independent baseball league. It's kind of like low A, maybe high A baseball. It's not all that clear. Maybe it was probably, you know, it's not double A. I would say the competition's not that good, and he's this good of a prospect where he was getting millions of dollars from the Dodgers or whomever was gonna take him up on drafting him and getting a signing bonus for him. It had to be sub two, right? I mean, it had to be a sub two ERA. He had to have an incredible WHIP, high strikeout rate, low walk rate. The problem is he was a bit of a head case, as we know. He accidentally set the press box on fire and the concession stand, and that really, you know, that doomed him with Brian Dennehy. That's one thing we've always known about Brian Dennehy: you don't set a concession stand on fire and expect to play baseball for him the next day. That's one of the rules we have. It's death, taxes, and don't set Brian Dennehy's concession stand on fire if you want to play baseball for him. And so I would say it had to have been a sub two. It's good enough, and he was good enough to where his arm was, assuming he doesn't blow out his elbow or anything like that, he was going to get another shot with somebody. And I've got to believe. I would guess we're in the 1.7, 1.8 range in terms of ERA. Okay, well, we've actually pushed about 40 minutes. I mean, really close to 40 minutes, depending on how I've got to edit this up. I think that's a success. I know it's incredibly awkward to listen to just me talking. I appreciate if you've clicked on this, if you've downloaded, if you've subscribed, if you left a review. That's so important for our iTunes. We haven't bugged you about that in a while, but it really is important to subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a review. 4-star or 5-star would be best, but you know, just be honest. We love your feedback, good or bad. We know the audio quality sucks at times. We know that things could improve technically with the podcast. We are working on that. It's going to be a little while. Really do appreciate everyone's support, and let's just find out if Tara Reid got Chinese food or Italian food. Thanks, everybody.